Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Toddcast After Dark. We just got off the set of our Meet the Press Election Night special, meaning it is after midnight. It is now Wednesday morning. So, good morning. And so far, we've had the results in Boston, New York City mayor's races. We're still technically waiting for the results in the New Jersey governor's race. Phil Murphy appears to be in the stronger position on that one. We're still waiting for the big one, the official call in the governor's race in Virginia. Still too close to call. The numbers are technically there for McAuliffe, but boy, every one of these missing precincts would have to be an 80-20 precinct for him. Glenn Youngkin does look to be in a fairly commanding position there. Joining me tonight to break all this down, actually joining me this morning to break all this down, Amy Walter, editor-in-chief of the Cook Political Report, and Mark Murray, senior editor here, politics editor for NBC News, and the one of the brains behind First Read. All right, you guys stayed up. So let's start with the single biggest takeaway. You know, like, what is the headline? Mark.
It's the environment, stupid.
Okay, there you go.
And Chuck, you know, we can actually debate tactics, strategy, whether Terry McAuliffe was progressive enough or centrist enough. But the fact that we are still seeing a situation where New Jersey is too close to call and we haven't called that contest, to me, shows environment matters most of all. And, you know, we actually framed First Read this morning. It's like, so how blue really is Virginia? Well, we found out, not blue enough for Democrats. And how blue is New Jersey? Maybe a little bit bluer than Virginia. But that shows you just the environment. We see the right track, wrong track numbers in our poll that we previewed on Sunday. And you look at Joe Biden's approval rating in Virginia at 44%. That's how Democrats lose.
Right.
Amy,
that was a 10-point swing,
yeah,
which is basically what the swing is going to be, a couple more points. But the president's disapproval rating, he's 10 points lower than he was on Election Day, right? He was a 54%, now 44% in terms of his approval rating. And the race swings 12 points Republican.
Single most important barometer in any midterm or election cycle
is always what, the president. It's always the president.
Always
and the and how people are feeling. And I think Mark's other point is a very good one, which is people are feeling anxious about the direction of the country, the economy. And then finally, I would say that we got another answer to a question about what does the Republican Party do post-Trump in a state like Virginia?
Yeah.
They had a choice. They had it's not a caucus. It was a convention where they could have gotten a very Trumpian candidate. Come on in and fight the same fight that Donald Trump lost over and over again in Virginia. Instead, they went with kind of a traditional Republican model, at least in the pre-Trump era.
He looks like every Republican governor of Virginia that I've ever had.
That's
going
right
back to 1993. George Allen, Jim Gilmore, Bob McDonnell. Like I said, he looks like George Allen.
But even those guys, George Allen couldn't survive in a wave election in 2006. And in 2017, Ed Gillespie, again, right out of Central Casting.
Yeah, same type of Republican.
But
yeah,
the environment was too much for him. And in this case, it wasn't.
All right. The idea, the whole how blue is everything. We're going to have a huge fight between the progressive wing of the party and the, is it moderate, centrist, pragmatic? I don't know. You know, no matter what you pick, the non-progressive wing of the party, Mark. We've seen, it seems like everybody is going to want to point the finger at somebody else other than themselves. But who should do you blame the progressives in Congress? Do you blame the moderates in Congress? Or is this on the president and how they've run this agenda?
Yeah, Chuck, how about all the above? And even like if you're talking about, you know, the agenda on Capitol Hill, is that really speaking to people's lives during this pandemic, in this economy, with a lot of worries that are going on? I mean, you know, our NBC News poll this weekend ended up showing nearly half of Democrats, not the country at large, but Democrats think the country's on the wrong track. And I don't think that's necessarily because of the legislative debate that we're seeing on Capitol Hill. But clearly, I think where it comes down on the president is, it is kind of his vision and what he wants to be able to do. You know, there is good news on the COVID front, but we're actually not really necessarily hearing that from the president and Democrats. We're actually hearing the legislative debate. There is good news to tout on the economy, but we're not actually hearing that. They are stuck in this kind of legislative procedural debate right now. And this is a time for Democrats to actually start touting some of the positive things that are happening or could happen in the months ahead.
By the way, Amy, did you notice there's another interesting question in the exit poll about the two parties? Hmm. This Republican Party too liberal or too conservative about the right, you know, and Democratic Party too liberal. More people said the Democratic Party was too liberal than the Republican Party is too conservative. And I know progressives are going to say, that's just a bunch of Republicans who said they're too liberal. Progressives are going to totally ignore this idea that they are somehow out of step. I know this because I've already heard it. They don't want to hear it. And in fact, they just say, no. We just haven't sold it well enough.
Right. It's always that's always the classic. We hear this all the time from losing candidates. Well, if we had just been able to get our message to a few more people, or if we had sold it a little bit better. But at some point, pretty clear, it's not connecting with voters. Mm-hmm. They either see it as out of touch, as Mark said, right? They're talking about things that aren't impacting my day-to-day life. I don't understand how it's doing it. And we heard this throughout the 2020 campaign and during Trump's presidency, which is, it's not so much that I don't like what Trump's doing on things like the economy or taxes or even some of the other issues.
But on immigration.
But even on immigration, exactly.
I know where you're going here. You're basically saying people just didn't like him.
They don't like him. They didn't like him.
They like more of his policies than Democrats want to admit.
And Chuck, you talk about the circular firing squad. You know, I look back on Joe Biden's inaugural address was unifying the country. Well, the country isn't unified. And in fact, our poll found that only 28% of all Americans give Joe Biden positive marks for unifying the country, but he hasn't been able to unify his own party. And so that, you know, if you want to start having progress, first you got to unify your party before you start unifying the country.
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm curious is I'm curious how the White House is going to reset here, because look, they're the leader of the party. They have to do a reset. Number one is going to be hurrying up and getting this bill passed. There's no doubt about it. But he's got to figure out how to, how to sell this party.
Well, that's
better.
What I think the whole sell thing will be. We get all the sausage making done now. The process no longer becomes the focus. And we spend 2022 touting not just this stuff, but all the other things. I was talking
about
all
the things that they're not going to be able to do.
Well, no, all the things that they said.
I'll try that next time.
No, all the things that they said we have already done, but we're not talking enough about, whether it's judges that have been put into federal positions, whether it is, you know, legislation that is not as high profile, but is very specifically targeted at certain audiences, talk about that stuff, brag about it. This is what I hear from Democratic voters. They want to hear the president brag more, like Trump did.
Right.
Tell them what you've done. Talk more about what you're doing. I don't want to hear any more about the sort of finagling, doing this balancing act between the two sides of his own party.
You know what I'm thinking about is the answer Gavin Newsom gave me two weeks ago, I guess I interviewed him when I asked him about what he thought was going on in Washington. He's like, I don't want to hear any more about Manchin and Sinema. And you're like, you're a guy that's been on Twitter and cable news too much. But I do think that the communication part of the, I do think the progressive media is not going to give Biden room to pull away from the progressive. I mean, I do think progressive media is going to make this more difficult, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's on cable.
Yeah. And Chuck, in fairness to Joe Biden and his White House and the Democratic Party, you know, this fall, I think the expectation was 6 or 7 months ago, this was going to be an awesome fall. People being on vacation.
The economy was going to be humming.
Yeah. Pandemic behind us. Everyone vaccinated, you know, rip roaring, ready to go. And it didn't turn out that way. You had the Delta variant. You ended up having then later the Afghanistan situation, which took up all of Joe Biden's August. And now we're in this kind of legislative malaise that's happening. So some of it's on their own doing. Some of it actually hasn't been. I think what I'm interested to see is, like, is this really rock bottom? You know, and we get to those really kind of roaring 20s later in the spring and the summer where people are feeling better. There isn't a new Delta variant. There isn't a kind of another Afghanistan.
And you can find running shoes.
You can. Or, and this is the problem, and this is why we pay attention to, you know, New Jersey and Virginia, is that sometimes what we kind of, those races and those environments, they sometimes stick until that new Congress actually comes in.
Yeah.
You know, Amy, there is a, I'm curious, do you think there's enough of a story here to be told about these off-year elections that, you know, that progressives are to the left of the Democratic electorate? And I say this because we're seeing in Buffalo, it looks like while the mayor got caught napping in a primary, he ends up running against a self-described socialist and appears, looks like he's going to win that. We have the, essentially the defund the police referendum go down to in defeat Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Eric Adams won his primary. Right. Terry McAuliffe won his primary going away over people that were running much further to the left of him. Now, at the same time, those same progressives would argue, but you know, you've got to motivate the progressive base, and they weren't motivated. And I get that too. But I keep coming back to that the elected Democrats, I think, are to the left of the rank and file Democratic Party, and I don't think they fully appreciate that.
Except if you ask yourself, what is the coalition currently of the Democratic Party? And if what they're counting on is we can continue to win by just running up the score with white college educated voters, young people, and voters of color. Mm-hmm. Young people, voters of color, especially black voters right now, are feeling incredibly disappointed and feeling as if the party has forgotten.
They're not. I thought they'd be happy that police reform was done. I thought they'd be happy that voting rights was passed. And shouldn't young people be happy about college tuition?
Exactly.
Oh wait, none of those things.
See, so they have this right. So this is the balancing act. If you're counting on this coalition, that is okay. Well, we can't really win those rural areas back anymore, and we've kind of lost the white working class. But it's okay because if you look at the demographic trends, America's going to be majority non-white, and we have the trend line is looking good for us, and the suburbs are where all the action is. Okay. But then you have to get all those groups to turn out. And a white, college-educated Northern Virginia voter is not prioritizing the issues that other members of the coalition, who are just as important to winning these federal – I'm sorry, these statewide races, or in the case of the presidency, being able to – win enough votes there.
Yeah. You got to – what's your thought there?
In a way, you almost kind of thought this debate was decided after Joe Biden ended up winning, and by a really closer margin than anyone expected.
But he's driven further to the – it's as if Bernie won the primary.
So, Chuck, I think last spring we could have actually, I think, argued this was settled. Joe Biden's victory, right. Terry McAuliffe overwhelmingly won, Eric Adams, all this stuff. But then this legislative debate has really created these new fissures in the party. And Democrats really have a math problem right now because, yes, progressives and liberals now make up a majority of Democrats, according to Gallup's polling. But nationwide, liberals and progressives only make up a quarter of all Americans. So your coalition to getting to 50% plus one in elections is winning over a lot of moderates. And I think the question is the Democratic Party and its current messaging and the way it's built up really able to have the progressives and the moderates all hug together? Because right now they're not doing it. And that to me seems a really big problem as we look forward to next year.
This feels very similar to where Republicans were right before 2016, which is they'd been the anti-Obama party for 8 years. And that's really all that held them together.
Right.
Ideologically, they were all over the place because you had some Tea Party people, you had the old line people, and they couldn't quite figure out what they stood for, what they were going to do. They put this autopsy forward after the 2012 election. Right. And the guy who comes out and wins the nomination in 2016 is exactly the opposite of what the smart people on the Republican side is.
They got to find their inner George Costanza.
They've got to find
the opposite
of whatever. Yeah. Or just realize that being the party that's not the Trump party can get you only so far.
The big fear is going to be retirements.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean,
and even this legislation that's hanging, you know, Barack Obama was able to withstand.
By the way, you know, got lost tonight. Bernie Sanders completely obliterated the compromise on the state and local tax stuff, which I do think messaging wise,
it was
a really awkward thing.
Yes,
Democrats have found a way to help their really rich constituents.
True, but someone like Mikey Sherrill really wants it too. And so it's a tough balancing act to be able to do. But, you know, Democrats, they need to find a more unifying message. And look, it's a lot easier when you're in the opposition.
Exactly.
Because you're able to be against Trump or against Barack Obama. And what Democrats really haven't been able to find is like what unifies them together and what is a really good message to take into the midterms. And they're still trying to come up with it.
Well, I would say about their only answer might be to put Trump back on Twitter.
I mean, seriously, it is not having him in your face all the time. But I also think they wanted somebody, I think in Biden, I don't know that Democrats had hoped they were going to get this great crusader. But it's the competency piece that has become the more frustrating. And I think that has become even more frustrating for independent voters. So here's a rule of thumb. We've been through enough elections to know this. If your base is depressed and the other side's is juiced up, hard to win elections. But the number three part, which is also happening to Democrats, is that independents are breaking against them. I don't know what it looked like in your exits, but certainly in your most recent poll, you've got... Yeah. Right? Is it double digits that he's
Close,
losing?
Yeah.
Close to double digits.
Yeah. All right. Republicans' lessons that are going to take away from this. And this to me is the wild card here. Are they going to think, oh, the stove's not so hot. That Trump stove, we can handle it. And I'm curious if that is the takeaway or is it Barbara Comstock's version of who Glenn Youngkin is? Oh, no. He's really more like Larry Hogan.
So- that stove exists with Donald Trump. He is not going away, even if he's off Twitter. He still is the biggest force in Republican politics today. Republicans, to me, I'm actually going to be really curious, you know, if Glenn Youngkin is the next governor of Virginia, how actually he governs.
I'm curious.
You know, are mask mandates and vax mandates gone away? What does he do on abortion, on gay rights? You could end up seeing a very combative type of governorship where all of a sudden he's going to war with everyone in a state that doesn't necessarily still favor Republicans. Or does he start being kind of an accommodating governor and tries to
– McDonald did. I mean, forget McDonald's scandal. Remember, McDonald was trying to, hey, let's do toll roads together.
Right. You know, I want to be the transportation governor.
And by the way, they did do something.
On the flip side is, do all those rural voters who really help Glenn Youngkin, is that the kind of governor that they actually want?
Yeah.
Right. I know.
They want a culture warrior. And I don't know if – what he is.
And I still don't know which
way he's going to go.
Yes.
So how he governs actually is going to be maybe the more interesting story than what the playbooks that we kind of decipher from this big environmental, you know.
If I were Republicans, yes, the stove is not as hot. I think that is pretty clear that voters are not,
not
interested.
Because we're like in the eye of the storm. Is it not as hot because the cancer's in remission? Or is it a stove that you put your hand there and you're going to go, wait a minute, I just burned my hand off and didn't realize it.
Right. So I think there are a couple of things. The first is that, yes, not being on Twitter, not being in our face, it is harder to make him an issue and to get people fired up about something that doesn't currently impact you. That is not going to be as easy for many Republicans to do as it was for Glenn Youngkin. One, he didn't have a primary. And we have to remember what it would have looked like if that were a primary.
During the 2009 race, too. I remember that with McDonald. Never had to go through a primary. Never had to go through a primary. This really is the key.
If you just imagine Amanda Chase, who was the Trump in heels candidate, Donald Trump getting involved in this, it drags out. Right? Usually it would be like a late summer primary or an June, July primary. Yeah. Can you imagine what that would have looked like? And he couldn't have run as the thread the needle, yeah. Trump guy.
That convention also came a month before the Democratic debate. So it gave him a whole month head start.
Yep. Yeah.
And with all the millions of dollars to hit the Northern Virginia airwaves in a really early way.
Yeah.
Sounds like you both think less replicatable than probably most Republicans think.
Probably. But there are some models right now.
Yeah.
Sununu in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But Chuck,
Ducey in Arizona.
Here to me is the big
I do think this lures Sununu into the race, doesn't it?
For sure.
Yeah. And it might lure Ducey in if Trump would let him.
But to me, this is the potential model, regardless of the candidates we end up seeing in the Trump stove, is if Virginia was this problematic, if New Jersey all of a sudden Democrats are biting their fingernails, what does this mean for Gretchen Whitmer in
for
Michigan
anybody?
Or Tony Evers in Wisconsin? And by the way, I got to say, with all of our eyes on the 2024 presidential contest, who's governor of Michigan and Wisconsin is a big deal, and including who's secretary of state. And so, you know, when we look at this overall environment, if Democrats want to have some institutional stakes and guardrails, they got to really turn around this environment.
Oh, and by the way, if you're looking then for an upset, Colorado has a Senate race.
Yeah.
Colorado is basically Virginia and a governor.
Yeah, Virginia and Colorado.
The same place.
I was just going to say, I do think that we found out Virginia is an anti-Trump state more than it is a blue state. And that may be something to learn when we all write off Colorado as a blue state, right? Or even in New Hampshire is a blue. You know, we've been seeing these things. It's like, no. Some of these states may revert now that if Trump continues to fade. All right. Speaking of fading.
Yeah.
Fading.
Oof.
Is it time to fade?
It's time to fade.
I know our producers are fading. I'm looking at Matt. He's like going, what the hell, man? I got it. Mars. I got a lot of stuff going on. Justice is going the same thing. All right. Let's go to bed.
Connect. It was fun.
Thanks.
It was great.